You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Find us on the web, ang-newswire.blogspot.com.
You are listening to the Angry Indian Unintelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Welcome back to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. I'm your host, Amy Indian, sitting in with our engineer and executive producer, Guadalupe Morales. This is the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service, broadcasting to the international Aboriginal community from occupied North America. Subscribe to our international podcast by way of our RSS feed at feedburner.com/Aboriginal Press Radio. And we are always carried by an ever-widening network of independent information providers not financially hamstrung by the corporatist news model. That would include Berkeley Liberation Radio, and you can find us on the Thank God It's Friday morning slot on Fridays on Radio Free Kansas. You can also leave us a polite voicemail at Aboriginal Media Group via Google Talk, and you can always email our studios at aboriginalradio@lababit.com. And if you catch us on Skype, you can reach us at Aboriginal News Group. So, now, I welcome back my brothers and sisters of the Fourth World, our non-Aboriginal ideological comrades, and the negative elements staunchly opposed to human justice and social harmony, but in spite of all that, they take the time to listen to this show on the sly anyway. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Now, there's a case out there that is really not being discussed, and you would think that it would be discussed with the Snowden scandal, with the WikiLeaks scandal, with the trial of Bradley Manning that's going on right now. It turns out that 6 IT professionals, 5 black men and 1 white, and I only mention that for the simple fact that when it comes to IT, you don't see a lot of shade. You know what I'm saying? You don't see a lot of colors. And, you know, these are 5 black and 1 white men. You know, I mean, I'm going to name them here. Kendrick Barnes, Gary L. Walker, Demetrius K. Harper, David A. Cipollo, Clinton A. Stewart, and David A. Banks. Now, they had a idea, right? This is the U.S., they had an idea. They had an idea that they, as IT professionals and as ex-military men, that they were going to step up and do something to help the security of the United States. So they came up with a program, a software application called CILC. The name of the small company, and I say it's a small company because they only had 18 employees. But it was known as IRP Solutions that concentrated on developing a software application called CILC, which stands for Case Investigative Lifecycle. This software, now I'm reading now from the Dr. Vibe show because he did a show on this earlier today, and I also want you to check it out. We're going to put the link up when we make this show public, which will be sometime this afternoon. But again, I'm reading from him here. Now, this stands for Case Investigative Lifecycle. Now, this software was developed to assist law enforcement in investigating a case through the prosecution. Now, I don't know the details. We'll find out about that later. But supposedly, the necessity of this type of software was overly apparent as the government indicated that one of the main reasons that they were saying. Now, you know how we feel about 911 over here. You know, we don't believe the official story because we know the official story. But the idea was, and anyone who's ever worked in any sort of an office or has ever worked for government knows, government agencies do not share information. So, you know, they decided to step up, do the capitalist thing, present this solution, and of course, make a living, employ people, do all of that thing, right? But see, it's, for whatever reason, it didn't work out that way. Still don't really know what the hell is going on. Sam Thurman, a president of Just Cause, and Cliff Stewart, a brother of one of the IPR men, they're explaining on the Dr. Vibe show that this is a misuse of power, that this is an abuse in terms of, you know, this whole capitalist meme, right? This whole war pornography meme. Now, I don't want to judge these brothers because I don't know, and I'm including the white man when I say brothers, because obviously he had enough humanity to work with people who were different than him, and he actually acted like what the American rhetoric says, and I think it's a goddamn disgusting shame that these men, including that man, are going through whatever it is they're going through. And the fact that the public doesn't know anything about this, the fact that Lupe and I were trying to find other information. I mean, we remember when the story was first reported, but there's no information out there. And like I said, when you have Eric Snowden, when you have Bradley Manning, when you have everything that's going on with Julian Assange and WikiLeaks? How is it that you let this group of men, because of a demographic factor, that you let these group of men language in this situation, and nobody seems to really care enough to want to investigate, to want to ask what the hell is happening? So, you know, all praise and due, you know, credit to Dr. Vibe up in Toronto, Canada, for bringing up this situation, because frankly, we've been sleeping on it because there wasn't enough information for us out there to really be able to collate anything to have a particular opinion, and we don't really have a position on this. But, you know, in a time of Trayvon Martin and the end of the Zimmerman verdict, we have to kind of ask, if you have an IT thing, you're talking about information sharing and what have you, if you're talking about leaks, why are you not going to raise the case? Why are you not going to raise the case of the IRP6? This doesn't make any sense, unless, like I said, it's because they're African. So we're going to take a very quick break so stations may identify themselves, and we're going to bring on Darcy Delaprosa, you already know, but we're going to bring on somebody else to discuss this case because, frankly, I don't know anything about it. So I want to get your ears quivering on this because this is obviously one of those stories that is being overlooked. This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Please stay tuned.
Remember, brothers, liberation is near. Even if they do count our votes several times every 4 years.
Internet radio for smarter originals.
Hi, my name is Isidore Bonney, and I'm from the San Carlos Apache tribe. I am 39 years old, and I am gay. And for the past 4 years, I have been living with full-blown AIDS and hepatitis C, two deadly viruses that are slowly eating and killing me. As a result of my diagnosis, I had no choice but to leave my reservation because of the stigma and the ignorance and the lack of confidentiality. So I had to live on the streets of Phoenix for 2 years, eating out of dumpsters, getting beaten, and wondering what else am I going to do with my life, if I had one, not really sure if I was going to live another year. But as a result, I managed to gain enough strength and confidence to face my debilitating illnesses and ignorance and the stigma that I was getting. And I went to the media who welcomed me. They told my story to the world. And since educating people, this has been a blessing to me. It has been more healing for me to be open with myself and with others. And as a result, I've been educating people not only in Arizona but throughout the country. And I think that's the best thing that I can do, is to just tell my story and educate people. And a lot of people ask me, Isidore, how can ignorance or stigma be reduced? And all I can say is that you have to just be educated. Educate yourself. Educate other people. Accept people, whether they're gay or not. If they have AIDS, care about them. Love brings healing where medication does not. And if you have any questions about HIV and AIDS, I would suggest that you contact your local AIDS office or your local AIDS agency for more information. But in the meantime, just know that AIDS has hit Native people, and we're doing all we can to fight this other debilitating illness that has struck our people, as others have in the past, and we will not give up.
I'm Dick Gregory with PETA. Martin Luther King Jr. taught me the fight against oppression is never an easy one. It's even harder if you have no voice. For animals held captive in circuses, life consists of cramped cages, shackles, and daily beatings. There is no escape. They cannot demand their freedom. Images like these bring only one word to my mind: slavery. Be an abolitionist for the animals. Please don't go to circuses. For more information, contact PETA.
757-622-PETA.
You are listening to Angry Indian Radio, the podcast of the Aboriginal Press News Service.
Do yourself a favor. Get a mind transplant. Listen to independent radio, the alternative media in general. This is Ward Churchill saying have a nice day.
Back in the 1950s and the 1960s and the 1970s, the United States government
had programs, some involving simple surveillance, some involving ways of getting information, some involving plots, basically to frame people for crimes, and some involving outright murder.
It was secret at the time because it was, by and large, illegal.
Really what COINTELPRO is, you know, a militarization of criminal justice.
It was a code word that was used by the FBI, actual war against the entire left movement.
To eliminate, intimidate, incarcerate, and terrorize a people.
It was a covert war strategy, and it was done because the government thought there was a war going on.
Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
This is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Welcome back. Yeah, I want to welcome back Darcy De La Prosa. You remember her. You know, that's our sister in Ireland that's, you know, doing the work that should be done over here. You dig what I'm saying? And she's made it international. And, you know, Darcy, thank you for coming back on Intelligent Aboriginal Radio.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right, so let me know what's going on here. We have a story that, you know, as I was saying earlier at the last segment, I don't know anything about other than the fact that it went down. You know, what exactly is going on with the case of the IRP6?
That is a case I've been following on Twitter. I got to correspond with Esther Lopez and a few of the others who are main advocates for the case. It's a biased case, but I will let Esther herself explain more.
Yeah, Esther, welcome to Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. Now, Ms. Lopez, you have been, from what I understand, on top of this case, and you know, you too can really only, you know, give us like the very basics of it, because the news, you know, the journalistic cadre out there that's supposed to be protecting our rights and keeping the public informed, they're not saying anything. So, you know, please give us a quick breakdown and welcome to the show.
Right. Well, thank you for having me on your show. I appreciate that so very much, and so does the IRP6 guys and their families. But the thing that's taking place here, and you hit it, you know, the nail on the head when you were expressing when the Dr. Vibe show has put out there on it. And we do understand that there's not a lot of information, you know, running around out there on it. The government doesn't want information out there on this case. And the reason for that is because of the software. Now, the thing is, as you were explaining from the top of the show, we have these six men, five black guys and one white guy, who are sitting right now in a federal prison serving terms from 7 to 11 years, wrongfully convicted, all because they created software, law enforcement software, to help this country from terrorist attacks. And I can't think of anything worse than you doing something and you being brought down by the same people that you are trying to help, you know, your country. And these guys did absolutely nothing wrong, absolutely nothing. Just six friends, you know, one of them had this idea to develop this software because he felt in his heart, you know, there's something that's got to be done about these terrorist attacks. You know, this is just ridiculous. And so he did get together with some of his friends, and they did develop this software in the small IT company, black-owned IT company here in Colorado Springs, Colorado. And the thing is, you know, what's so disturbing, they're saying that these guys, you know, had this purported software as if, you know, it wasn't real. It was your business was a front, is what they were trying to say. To scam staffing agencies, which is so bizarre. And if you were gonna do that, why would you have retired FBI agents working in your company helping you to develop the software? If you're gonna be scamming someone, that's kind of far and beyond. I don't understand that. Now, you know, all you have here, if you have debt that you owe somebody, then you take that to a civil court. You don't take that to a federal court. And this whole case is about debt that these guys owed staff and agencies. But because, you know, they wanted to get this software, and IBM, as I was explaining to you, you know, before we came on, IBM could not get the software. They decide, you know, they along with the FBI, you know, decided we're gonna put these guys out of business because we need that software. Now, IBM has been getting all this money from the Department of Justice, from Homeland Security, you know, New York Police Department, Philadelphia Police Department, all these different ones, because then they cannot come up with the software that these six men came up with. Six little men here in Colorado, they come up with the software that this big, huge company could not develop. And they've been getting paid for it hand over fist, you know, as far as money goes. Now they want to come in, take this software. They don't want to work with these guys. They don't want to partner with these guys by any stretch of the imagination. They want to take the software and call it their own and put their own label on something that they did not develop. That is not going to happen. Now, Homeland Security has looked at this first phase of this software. They're talking over $100 million just for the first part of the software to these men, to these black guys here. Now, you tell me how many IT companies that you know are owned by black men?
I can't think of any.
That is our point exactly. But you know what? They're trying to, you know, people are trying to refuse it to say that this is a racial thing. This is a racial thing. They don't want these guys to have this kind of money. They don't want them to have it. There's just no way, you know? So these guys are going to sit here. They work for all these years to develop this software. And then you're going to get a search warrant to come in because you had a president from one of the staffing agencies that has friends with IBM, who have friends with IBM because she works for the does work with the federal government. Okay, IBM is one of her contractors. The government is one of her contractors. So she tells one of the guys in the IRP6, I'm going to bring you down. She sends them an email telling them, I'm going to bring you down. I'm going to let everybody know that you are a scammer and not to do business with you. I'm going to take your Audi. I'm going to take your Cadillac, and I'm going to drag your name through the mud. And that's what she did. That's exactly what she did. And then they get together, and because they have done business with Holland & Hart, who is a law firm here in Denver, Colorado, one of the hugest ones in the United States, okay? They get together with them, and they take this to the FBI the first time. The FBI said, well, this is just a civil matter, okay? This should be taken care of in civil court. Well, they wanted to make sure that it was more than just that. They came in, the FBI, with about 22 armed policemen, armed FBI agents. They raided these guys' business. They only had about 15, 16 people there. They raided their business coming in, and the search warrant said, you're going in for financial records, okay? The financial records, they put them right there in a cabinet in the middle of the floor saying, there are the financial records. Take whatever you need. Mm-hmm. They came in at 9 o'clock in the morning. They did not touch one set of financial records. Instead, they imaged every computer starting with the janitor. They searched every person's purse. They went through their pockets. They went through their bags. They went through every single thing that they had there until 11 o'clock at night. Okay, taking absolutely no financial records, but they imaged every computer. Now, the one white gentleman that was there, okay, after they corralled all the black people into the cafeteria and told them they could not leave, and if you need to go to the restroom, somebody is going to have to escort you, okay? One of us will escort you. Well, the only white gentleman that was there, they gave them their card, told him, take your stuff, and you can leave. And call us late.
Oh.
Okay. So now you're going to tell me this is not racial crap? This is race at the yin yang. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what I see from this.
Darcy, you know, you're a resident of Ireland. And, you know, in many ways, Ireland has been falsely, or maybe there's a misconception. I'm not sure. I can only read what the international news reports that Ireland, in many ways, has become the racist capital of Europe. But the difference in many ways is that Europe acknowledges that there's an issue. What Sister Lopez is talking about is happening in the United States. We're talking about black men who are not radicals. They are not...
You know yourself in the States, it's very biased. There is a lot of racism.
But what I'm trying to say is, you know, these are men who obviously believed in the system, probably still believe in the system. You know, they were obviously trying to help protect this country from, you know, from foreign terrorism. So you would think that anything that would improve law enforcement in terms of response, in terms of being able to, you know, to respond to emergencies would be something that they will want. But as Sister Lopez has mentioned, you know, the racial factor, and what I want to get from you being from Ireland is, how do you view this as an activist, looking at the United States from the outside, where you have people who are obviously to some degree conservative? They believe in the United States. They're obviously supportive of capitalism, and they were supportive of the IT industry, and they were supportive of the IT industry supporting law enforcement. So what do you, you know, what could possibly be the problem other than the fact that this was a minority-owned company and that this software could have made another company that was not minority-owned multimillionaires overnight? I mean, as somebody who does not live here, you know, how do you view this as an activist?
Well, my opinion is, as you know, as I'm an activist, I've seen the injustices like with Devante, Johnny Savory, and many more.
For continuing to struggle in those efforts. I don't know anyone else in Europe that is working as hard as you are on these issues.
Well, in my case, as you know, I've been advocating a long time in Johnny's case and in Devante's. It's cases that in Devante's himself, he's innocent. The system know he's innocent, but yet they still won't release him. We keep putting out there, we are trying to get a petition. We've done a petition, set up with Kim Worthy. Kim Worthy knows about Devante's case. She has the power to release him, but she won't back down. I hit myself against the wall because I continue fighting these cases. And to me, like with Ethel and the rest of the advocates in the IPsec, all I can say to you is from what I see, I know it's racial bias, but all you can keep doing is just being a voice and keep putting their cases out there and hoping that it will come and fall on the right authority that will take it up. They should be released. They shouldn't be in prison.
That's right.
No, because, I mean, as, you know, from what I can see here, and as I'm hearing from Sister Lopez, it's just, you know, here it is, they had a good idea. And I hate to say it this way because it sounds bad, but I really don't know how else to say this. It seems that, you know, white folks were just, hey, you know, we just cannot stand here and let these Negroes, you know, make this kind of money and have this kind of influence on the society. You know, we're just not going to allow this to happen. And we understand our history here in North America, and we know that this has happened before.
Yeah.
This has happened many times before. But, you know, Sister Lopez, I mean, you know, after 9/11, mm-hmm. when we're all supposed to be Americans, when we're all supposed to be brothers and sisters, you know, regardless of political affiliation, regardless of religion, creed, and sexual orientation and all of that, What excuse can it be for the American public and for the particular person that is in leadership right now to not discuss this case and not bring it out? I mean, who is heading the Justice Department? What the hell is going on here?
You know what? That is the question that we find that nobody wants to answer. Nobody wants to answer. We have a group of people, not just myself, but a whole team of people who are constantly sending letters. We're making phone calls, emails to Eric Holder's office, to talking to his confidential assistant, Annie Holder. Nobody will give us any information. Nobody will tell us anything. Eric Holder refuses to say one word about what's going on here. You know, he's so busy raking the leaves over his own crap that he messed up and stepped back in, that he doesn't even have time to reach out to anybody else, or he doesn't care that anybody else has a problem here. It's like, why are you there? What are you there for? You're over the Department of Justice. every letter that we have written to these people have sent us back to the exact same place that we started from. Now, with this case and with these guys, during their trial, they had the trial lasted about 3.5 weeks or so. Okay. During this trial, there was a bench conference that took place. And they were all there talking to the judge, you know, the court reporter, everybody. Now, she tells them, the judge tells these guys who were pro se at the time, okay? They were pro se, they were defending themselves because they had to get rid of those crooked public defenders that were assigned to them who were on the side of the government. They were not going to have it. They figured it's best if we defend ourselves. They're working for the government and they're going to tell us to take a plea bargain and we have done absolutely nothing. That was never going to happen. Okay? So they tell them to take a plea bargain. They do not. But during this bench conference, okay, she tells them one of them is going to have to testify since you can't get your witnesses here, which she did absolutely nothing to assist them in getting them there. If you can't get your witnesses here, then one of you going to have to take this stand. She's going to tell them, one of them going to have to take that stand or she's going to throw out their case. You know what I'm saying? How are you going to do some crap like that when the prosecutor has already said his was going to take a certain amount of time? Okay. So the guys understood that some of their witnesses were going to have to come from out of the state. So they were relying on the prosecution to use the time that he has said that he was going to take for the case. So their witnesses were not there. Now, the judge has been really nasty to them the entire trial. The entire trial. First of all, she doesn't like the fact that you got all you guys sitting here, you're going to represent yourselves and you're black. There's no way. This crap is racist all over the place. But then during this bench conference is where she violated the Fifth Amendment right by making them take the stand to testify against themselves. Mm-hmm. Okay? So then the guys are asking, can we get a copy of that unedited transcript? They don't give them that copy. They give them some junk, but they didn't give them nothing about what took place with this bench conference.
So what is the standing of their legal representation at this point?
Well, right now, you know, they do have appellate counselors right now, you know, who their cases and appeals at this moment right now. But without the transcript, without the entire transcript, what kind of appeal are they going to get? You know what I'm saying? They should have everything there. We have been fighting tooth and nail to get this so-called missing transcript. Is what this court reporter is saying. Transcript is missing or unavailable. What are you talking about?
Is there any way that we can get the court transcripts, Ethel?
That's been what we've been fighting to get. That's why we've been constantly calling and writing to the Department of Justice and Eric Holder and President Obama and Mrs. Obama and every congressman.
And what about setting up a global petition for us?
They will not tell us how or will not even investigate why this transcript is missing in this federal criminal case. Nobody.
That is appalling.
That's crap, okay? That is crap. That's what, and all of these people are working together. They know exactly what has taken place in this case, but nobody wants to speak out and tell us anything. They're holding back. They know exactly what's going on.
Well, you know, I want to ask you to find a question as a lead out to this because, and I'm asking this specifically because I was on online last night dealing with this, I'm just going to say what it is, you know. European white settler in North America who was supportive of the Zimmerman verdict and was out here trolling, looking for people to argue with because, you know, and sending me Thomas Sowell and other, you know, black Republican kiss asses, you know, talking about, well, they're conservative the way I am and you should be this way. But, and I want to ask you this. You can't get a case really where you're dealing with people who can be African and more conservative and more pro-US than what you're telling me here.
Okay.
You can't get much more I love America than
Thank
what you're
you,
telling
Ray.
Me here. Coming from black men and coming Thank from, and I want to point this out, that one of their partners, because we got a lot of cultural nationalists out there that don't, you know, they might as well be Klan members that is of another color.
Yeah.
You know, because their whole view of racism is really just as narrow-minded, just as xenophobic, and just as goddamn bad as the people that we're dealing with. But you had a lot of black Republicans, a lot of black conservatives. And I named Thomas Sowell, and there's also Clarence Thomas. Right? Yeah. You know, I can go down the list. Alan West, Ben Carson, I can go down the list. Where were all these Uncle Toms?
That's right.
Where are these black Republicans when conservative black people really need them?
Yes.
And that's my question for you, because this is what these white races really like to flow up all the time. You know, the black people who kiss ass. Right. Mm-hmm. They like to throw these, you know, Michael Steele, human lawn jockey types out here at us mm-hmm. to say, well, this is the type of Negro you should be about. Be like mm-hmm. Oprah. Be like Obama. OK, well, here you have a group of black men who were running a African owned company where they hired their own people. And they had a white man who was willing to work with them. Brother to brother, shoulder to shoulder, arm to arm. This is everything all these racists in the Tea Party keep goddamn talking that they're about. Now, here's an abuse case where you have a major company. I mean, come on, ladies and gentlemen, if you're a regular listener to this show, you know what we've said about IBM here and their connections to the Nazi Party, their connections to what happened in the European Holocaust. We already know the history of IBM. This is a matter of documented fact. It's a matter of the documented record. So when we look at this and what Sister Lopez is telling us today, I ask again, where are all these goddamn black conservatives? Where are these black, you know, Republicans? And where are the white people who claim to support all of that? Where are they in a case like this with the, you know, IRP6 cannot get justice for their labor under a capitalist system in what is supposed to be the freest country in the world under, a, you know, being led right now by a black man? Sister Lopez.
That's it. And he and the black man that's doing absolutely not a cotton picking thing for the people here. Not for the black people here. Nothing.
Not a thing.
Now my the point that, and the one thing I want to say as far as is Obama, I don't really get this. You've got six men sitting here in prison. These men have families, these men have children. Mm-hmm. These were six Christian men. You've got a couple of them that who are ministers in the church. They all belong to the same church. They're all being taught, you know, exactly how to live their lives, to always do what's right. One of them is the pastor's son. One of them is their son-in-law. And like I said, one of them is a Sunday school superintendent. Two of them are ministers. What are you telling me? And then so they're running a business where they're hiring. They've got white people working in the business. Mm-hmm. That was one of the things that when the FBI went there, they asked them if a white woman applied to work in this kind of, in this business, would you hire her? Yes, you jackass. There was a white woman working in the in that business until she left. It's not about this is all we're going to have in here. This is all we're about. That business was about the people who was able to do the job. Mm-hmm. Okay? These weren't all friends. Some of these 19, 20 people that were in this business, these guys didn't even know them. You know, they hired them based on their experience and their work ethics to do the job that they needed them to do. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? So when they bring all this crap in here talking about, you know, well, we're here to get that, you're a liar. You're not here to get anything except the software that these men have created.
So they basically charged the people who ran this company with racism as you know, to just like, you know, put some yeast on what they already had in mind to do anyway.
Exactly. Now for them to have stated that these guys' business was purported software. They weren't really, this was just a company, you know, to front and scheme these staffing agencies. Then tell me, why is these guys' software being noted in an FBI handbook? Mm-hmm. The Silk software in Colorado Springs, Colorado, from the company IRP Solutions.
Wow.
Can't be that. How is that if they are having purported software? And not only that, going back to this blame court, this judge, Christine Arguello and Greg Goldberg, they both worked in Holland and Hart. Greg Goldberg is the lawyer from Holland and Hart who hand carried this information over to his friend, the prosecutor, Matthew Kirsch, to tell him how to persecute these guys, how to prosecute them. Okay? This is what you're going to charge them with. This is how you're going to charge them. The judge, Christine Arguello, was a partner in the same law firm. The U.S. attorney was also a partner in that law firm. Now, granted, they weren't partners there at the same time, But when they asked the judge, Christine R. Wells, to recuse herself, she refused to do so. She refused to do so. Why is that? Why would she refuse to recuse herself when she already had connections with these people and the people who brought this case about? All of this stuff is, and then this court reporter, she has, I mean, this is just over the top with her, refusing to allow even the counselors to have copies of the unedited transcript, and you're running me all over town trying to find it. You're going to tell me, well, you can go to the court clerk's office in Denver. It is filed there. It is on file there. Well, I went there. I took an hour. I drove up there and I went there to check for myself. I came back and let her know she was lying. It is not there. That transcript is not there. And like I said, there is nobody in the Department of Justice. They are full of crap. They are doing what they're doing to pack their own pockets, you know, and to fill the prisons with more people so that they can make whatever kind of money that they can make off of them. They don't care. If they're black, they're going to hand it to you. Just like that. Mm. Just like that. They don't care if you've done something wrong, if you've not done something wrong. These six men have six families. If you have their small kids, have to go to a prison every weekend to visit their fathers. They've never been away from them. They have all kinds of issues and stuff going on.
You're talking about Christian men to get up and go to work every day. They're every not taking nothing day. From nobody. They're earning their money.
Their family. You know, and the thing too is the money that these guys were making as contractors, okay, as contractors, was more money than they were making in their own business that they had there. So they're going to, these guys were making almost $200 an hour working for a contractor. Mm. A contractor. They were that intelligent IT guys, okay? And this is how they were taking care of their families and going about living their lives. Not coming up with some idea getting together that's going to scam these staffing agencies. That's a crock of crap.
Yeah.
Sitting in prison, and something has to be done about it. And every time we go out on Twitter or wherever we go and we put the links out there for people to read the story, they are going, somebody on Twitter is canceling out the links. Oh. Every time we go back to check them, the links are being blocked out now.
Well, we'll see how long this stays up on the net, because this happened to us before when we've talked about certain subjects. You know, I just want to give Darcy a chance to have a word on this before we go out, because I wouldn't know about the story as much as I do, because I believe I actually got the first link about it from Darcy. So, you know, your thoughts on this as we go out here.
I feel we will continue supporting you. We will keep putting the links out there. We will keep letting people know the story. But I think we should look into it, seeing if we could get them trying to find out how to get the transcripts.
Yeah.
And let's just try to, you know, get some legal professionals from the IT world who will understand the bias aspects of this case and want to be involved. And this is my challenge for you black Republican lurkers that come to the show so you can say what you want to say on your little blogs. Here are a group of conservative, patriotic, obviously Jesus believing capitalist black men who were obviously doing what they felt was their duty to do for their country. And this is the way that they're being treated. So, racism is over. I think not. Effa Lopez, thank you so much for being on. And, you know, we would like to have you on and anyone else that has data on this story so that, you know, we can get the people to understand what's happening with this.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the time that you've taken to allow me to say what I needed to say. And you know, I really do appreciate you putting our story out there so that it can be everywhere that it needs to be, because people need to know about this. This can happen to anybody.
This can happen to anybody.
It can happen to anybody. You know, and black people as a whole, they don't stick together on anything. They don't stick together on absolutely anything. They may come together just for a moment when something happens, but then after that, they don't, you know, it's all said and done. And that's how people, you know, tend to get over on us as a race of people, because they know we're not going to stick together on anything. But this is
Esther,
the time is now to do something.
Could you put your links in, please?
I will.
Let people know to the websites and the Facebook page. Will you let them know how to, like, search them?
Okay, please, www.freethe IRP6.org.
Okay, everybody, I hope you got that information out there. I want you to go check out that link. And I also want you to check out Darcy De La Prosa's information. We're going to make sure that her links are also listed when this show is published online. We want to thank both these ladies for coming on and doing the right thing, keeping us educated, keeping us involved, keeping our ears quivering, because, you know, as I say, man, the tide is high, so we've got to understand what the hell is happening out here. Okay, this is Intelligent Aboriginal Radio, internet media for intelligent Aboriginals.
Internet radio for smart Aboriginals.
Found in the middle of the story about the death of Lazarus, the Lord Jesus' friend. Jesus loved Lazarus' friend. Lazarus had died. Jesus was outside the village of Bethany. He had not yet reached the city limits. Martha had met him, and he and Martha had talked. Martha was mad, and she let the Lord know that she was mad. Jesus had reassured her with words she did not understand. I am the resurrection and the life. Whosoever believeth on me, though he were dead, yet shall he live again, and whosoever liveth and believeth shall never die. He had reassured her. She didn't understand those words, but at least he had calmed her down for just a little bit. She left Jesus there, went back to the house and called her sister Mary and told her privately, Jesus is here and he is calling for you. And when Mary heard those words, she got up quickly and went to where Jesus was, just outside of Bethany. When those who were grieving with her saw her get up quickly and go out, they ran along with her. You find that story in John 11. They thought she was going to her brother's grave site to grieve. And when Jesus saw her crying, and when Jesus saw those who were trying to console her crying, he started weeping. The text says he was greatly disturbed in spirit, and he was deeply moved. He asked Mary and Martha, "Where have you laid him?" And they said, "Lord, come and see." And he cried. Jesus wept. You know, death will make you weep. When you lose somebody that you love, you will weep. When you lose somebody who is close to you, the tears will come. I ain't telling you about nothing that I read in a book somewhere. I'm telling you what I know from personal experience. I'm not telling you what I studied in pastoral counseling. I'm telling you what I have lived through. When the pain of death hits and the pain is deep, when the pain of death hits and the pain is personal, when the finality of death comes crashing in on you and those words, "Never again," move from the region of possibility into the heart-wrenching realm of reality. That smile that made your day, never again will you see it. That laughter that lit up your world, never again will you hear it. That wisdom that anchored your soul, never again will you experience it in this life. When that happens to you, my beloved, you will weep, you will cry. Jesus wept, Jesus cried. And most Christians learn very early in their walk of faith that John 11, 35 verse, what does it say? Jesus, come on. You know, that's the first Bible verse you memorize. You used to go around the table having to say a Bible verse for dinner. What's your Bible verse? Jesus wept. But guess what? Guess what? Tonight's text teaches us that that is not the only time that Jesus wept. On this day that we call Palm Sunday, when the whole multitude of the disciples began to praise God joyfully, as we just read, for all the deeds of power that they had seen. On the Sunday that we call Palm Sunday, as Jesus rode on the colt, on the Sunday before Maundy Thursday, the Sunday before Good Friday, while some of the Pharisees in the crowd tried to stop the praise of the procession that was taking place, on the Sunday before he was put to death on a cross, stretched between two thieves, the Sunday that he said, if these who are praising me hold their peace, then the rocks will cry out. On the Sunday before he sealed our salvation, as he came near the city, the text we just read said, in the midst of the praise, Luke tells us that he wept over the city. He cried for his people who did not know the things that make for peace. He cried for his people because they were blinded by their culture. They were blinded by their condition. They were blinded by their circumstance. They were blinded by their oppression. They were blinded by being in a spot where they desired, deeply desired, revenge. And they could not see the things that make for peace. We keep forgetting, and we need to remember. Jerome Ross wrote about it. I keep reminding you of it. Write it down so you don't forget. These people had, in Luke 19, an occupying army living in their country. Jesus, in verse 43, calls them their enemies. Say enemies. Their enemies had all the political power. Remember, they had to send Jesus to a court presided over by the enemy. A provisional governor appointed by their enemies ran the civic and the political affairs of their capital. He had backing him up an occupying army with superior soldiers. They were commandos trained in urban combat and trained to kill on command. Remember, it was soldiers of the 3rd Marine Regiment of Rome who had fun with Jesus, who was mistreated as a prisoner of war. An enemy of the occupying army stationed in Jerusalem to ensure the mopping up action of Operation Israeli Freedom. These people were blinded by the culture of war. Do you know what it is like to live under military rule 24/7, 365? These people were blinded by their circumstance of oppression. Their enemies not only had all of the political power with Governor Pontius Pilate. Y'all call him Pontius Pilate. He's Italian. Pontius Pilate. Pontius Pilate was running the provisional government. Their enemies also had the military power. They not only had political power, they had the military power. It was Roman soldiers who kept Jesus up all night. It was the Italian army who led Jesus out to Calvary on Friday morning. It was the occupying military brigade who forced Simon of Cyrene to carry the cross for Jesus. These people were tired of their oppression. They wanted the enemy up out of their land. Some of them did, some of them did. Not the businessmen, not those in bed with the enemy. Let's be clear. But the average citizen wanted them out, and they also wanted revenge. They wanted their king to get this military monkey off their backs. They wanted a regime change, if you will. And look what they called Jesus. Look at it in verse 38. They called Jesus the king. Look at it. Look at verse 38. Look at, they call him the king. Blessed is the king who comes in the name of the Lord. They want their king. See, their king, they saw God, the Lord, getting ready to do something about their situation. Blinded by the pain of their situation, they could not see the things that make for peace, y'all. So Jesus cried. Let me help you. The military does not make for peace. The military only keeps the lid on for a little while. The military doesn't make for peace. And the absence of armed resistance doesn't mean the presence of genuine peace. Somebody needs to hear me tonight. You're not hearing me. War does not make for peace. We said at the 11 o'clock service, fighting for peace is like raping for virginity. War does not make for peace. War only makes for escalating violence and a mindset to pay the enemy back by any means necessary. When your wife or your children have been crushed by the enemy, when your mother or your father have been mowed down by the military, peace is not on your mind. Paybacks is the only game in town. You just bide your time and you wait for your opportunity, but somebody is going to pay dearly for the permanent damage that has come into your life and wrecked
shift your world as it rocks your world. Military might doesn't make for peace. War does not make for peace. Occupying somebody else's country doesn't make for peace. Killing those who fought to protect their own homes doesn't make for peace. Press conferences claiming victory do not make for peace. Regime change, substituting one tyrant for another tyrant, with the biggest tyrant pulling the puppet strings of all the tyrants, that does not make for peace. Colonizing a country does not make for peace. If you don't believe me, look at Haiti, look at Puerto Rico, look at Angola, look at Zimbabwe, look at Kenya, look at Asta Boys in South Africa. Colonization does not make for peace. Occupation does not make for peace. And subjugation only makes for temporary silence. It does not make for peace. These people who wanted a new king were blinded by their circumstances, and it made Jesus cry because they missed the meaning of his ministry. Turn to your neighbor and say, they missed the meaning of his ministry. When Jesus says you did not recognize the time of your visitation from God, down to verse 44, Jesus is saying you did not recognize the time of my ministry. You did not see the meaning of my ministry. You are missing the real things that make for peace. You are confusing external appearances with internal power. You're looking at the man, and you're not looking at the one that the man represents. You are looking at the miracle. That's verse 37, when the deeds of power, they were praising God. Deeds of power, that's the miracle. Sight to the blind, deeds of power. Hearing to the deaf, deeds of power. Speech to the mute, deeds of power. Cleansing of the lepers, deeds of power. Wholeness to the broken, deeds of... You are looking at the miracles and missing the meaning behind the miracle. A miracle is just a sign. A sign only points to something or points the way to something. Don't get fixated on the sign and miss completely what the sign is pointing to. The deeds of power point to a God who is greater than any physical limitation, and a God who can overcome any limiting situation. The things that make for peace, only God can give. Y'all looking to the government for that which only God can give. No wonder he wept. He had good cause to cry. These people under oppression were confusing God and government. Say confusing God and government. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to hang out here homiletically for just a little while, and then I'm going to let you go home. I have got to pause here, however, as a pastor, because a lot of people still confuse, 2,000 years later, they still confuse God with their government. Now, see, we can see clearly the confusion in the mind of a few Muslims. And please notice, I did not say all Muslims. I said a few Muslims who see Allah as condoning killing and killing any and all who don't believe what they believe. They call it jihad. We can see clearly the confusion in their minds, but we cannot see clearly what it is that we do. We call it crusade. When we turn right around and say that our God condones the killing of innocent civilians as a necessary means to an end. We say that God understands collateral damage. We say that God knows how to forgive friendly fire. We say that God will bless the shock and awe as we take over unilaterally another country, calling it a coalition, because we got three guys from Australia going against the United Nations, going against the majority of Christians, Muslims, and Jews throughout the world, making a preemptive strike in the name of God. We cannot see how what we are doing is the same thing Al-Qaeda is doing under a different color flag, calling on the name of a different God to sanction and approve our murder and our mayhem. And let me tell you something. Jesus said something about that too. Oh yes, he did. Jesus said, how can you see the speck in your brother's eye and can't see the log in your own eye? Well,
I submit to you that we can't see it, first of all, because we don't see nobody who don't look like us, dress like us, talk like us, worship like us as brother. And Jesus calls them brother. We demonize them, and that makes it all right to kill them because our God is against demons. Then we can't see the speck, most of all, because we equate our government with our God. We confuse government and God. Let me tell you something. We believe in this country, and we teach our children that God sent us to this promised land. He sent us to take this country from the Arawak, the Susquehanna, the Apache, the Comanche, the Cherokee, the Seminole, the Choctaw, the Hopi, and the Arapaho. We confuse government and God. We believe God sanctioned the rape and robbery of an entire continent. We believe God ordained African slavery. We believe God makes Europeans superior to Africans and superior to everybody else too. We confuse God and government. We said in our founding documents, as a government, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Created, that means God, and endowed with a certain inalienable right, that means given by God. And then we define Africans in those same documents as three-fifths of a person. We believe God approved of African slavery. We believe God approved segregation. We believe God approved apartheid. And the doctrine which says that all men are created more equal than other men, and we're talking about white men. We confuse God and government. We believe God approves of 6% of the people on the face of this earth controlling all of the resources on the face of this earth, while the other 94% live in poverty and squalor, while we give trillions of dollars of tax breaks to the white rich. We believe God was a founding member of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. Look at the lily whiteness of the G7 nation the next time you see a picture, and then tell me if you see anything wrong with that picture when you hold it up against the picture of the color of the world's population. We confuse God and government. We believe God is on the side of the wealthy. We believe it's all right to send our military to fight, and if necessary, to die in Iraq and anywhere else we decide is a part of the axis of evil, while George W. cuts the military benefits so that when those boys and girls come back home, they can be as bad off as some of the Iraqis that we just liberated. We confuse God and government. We do. We believe we have a right to Iraqi oil. We believe we have a right to Venezuelan oil. We believe we got a right to all the oil on the face of the earth, and we got the military to take it if necessary. Or as George W. piously says, as God so leads him. We confusing God and government. We believe it is all right to decimate the Afro-Colombian community by arming the paramilitary with United States tax dollars, our dollars, a hired military whose real job is to protect the oil line owned by United States companies tied to the presidency, which was stolen by the oil interest. We confusing God and government, and it gets worse. It gets worse. We've got a paranoid group of patriots in power that now, in the interests of homeland stupidity, I mean homeland security, excuse me, they are taking away the constitutional right of free speech because it's harmful to the interests of national security. And those interests equate God with government. Our money says in God we trust. And our military says we will kill you under the orders of our commander-in-chief if you dare to believe otherwise. We are still confusing God and government in the year 2003, just like they confuse it in Luke 19. Well, in case you are in that great number, and I understand from the polls that the number has gone up, still confused. If you're in that number of confused folks 2,000 years after Christ, let me share three quick things with you just to help clear up your confusion. Turn to your neighbor and say, now listen, you got to say it right. Say it with attitude and with ebonics. Say he Sydney, help somebody tonight. Turn on the other side and say, Fitna. Government is number one. Governments lie. This government lied about their belief that all men were created equal. The truth is they believed all white men were created equal. The truth is they did not believe that even white women were created equal in creation nor in civilization. The government had to pass an amendment to the Constitution to get white women to vote. Then the government had to pass an equal rights amendment to get equal protection under the law for women. The government still thinks a woman has no rights over her own body, and between Uncle Clarence, who sexually harassed Anita Hill, and a closeted Klan court that is a throwback to the 19th century, handpicked by Daddy Bush, Ronald Reagan, Gerald Ford, hung between Clarence and that stacked court, they're about to undo Roe versus Wade, just like they're about to undo affirmative action. The government lied in its founding documents, and the government is still lying today. Governments lie. Turn to your neighbor and say, governments lie.
Which shall live in hell, sleeps under when the grand scheme plan keeps all these people wondering why we still running in place, frustrated. Pride is mistaken for hate, it's upgraded. I got a little breath left, less suffocated. Point at the epiphanies and call them all drug related. The time I spent with my life unbent, trying to find the friends inside my head. Must have disengaged every phase and stage. But my I'm coming of age. My unofficial autobiography will be accompanied with tips on how to smile. Cause I found that when they don't see you frown, they never know that you're a threat and they don't sweat you when you come around. So who's gonna be my next door savior? Step up to your neighbor and do me a favor. Take off the mask, let it all collapse. Empty the pack and watch your wings grow back. They want us to fight. They just wanna get high, up all day, all night. Trying to get fly. When I get some money, I'ma buy me some time. I can't fight you more until I'm finished with mine. They want us to fight. They just wanna get high, up all day, all night. Trying to get fly. When I get some money, I'ma buy me some time. I can't fight you more until I'm finished with mine. Society becomes jealousy. Intimacy becomes intensity. Say it with a smile like it's meant to be. And all of a sudden, boom, American family. And I can tell when you're mad at your past, because you tend to take them turns just a little too fast. I can tell how you push your foot on the gas, that you already knew that you was gonna finish last. Slow it down and take a little time to look up at them clouds with the fake silver lining. Up in a tree knowing damn well you never reach the top, but you don't stop, you keep climbing. Well, okay, it's settled. No more nights in this weed and thorn infested meadow. Uh-oh, from this day forth, only forward I pedal. Get the memo, I'm cutting the strings to pedal. Shuffle the cards and let's argue. Rooted in between the computer games and cartoons. Stop and watch us all get lost between God and a shot of scotch. Let's get fly. We just wanna get high, up all day, all night. Trying to get fly. When I get some money, I'ma buy me some time. I can't fight you more until I'm finished with mine. We want us to fight. We just wanna get high, up all day, all night. Trying to get fly. When I get some money, I'ma buy me some time. I can't fight you more until I'm finished with mine.
Vietnam War. Governments lied. The government lied about Nelson Mandela, and our CIA helped put him in prison and keep him there for 27 years. The South African government lied on Nelson Mandela. Governments lied. Turn back to your neighbor and say it again. Governments lied. The government lied about the Tuskegee experiment. They purposely infected African-American men with syphilis. Governments lied. The government lied about bombing Cambodia. And Richard Nixon stood in front of the camera. Let me make myself perfectly clear. We are not. The government's lied. The government lied about the drugs for arms contra scheme orchestrated by Oliver North. And then they pardoned, the government pardoned all of the perpetrators so they could get better jobs in the government. Governments lied. The government lied about inventing the HIV virus as a means of genocide against people of color. Governments lied. The government lied about a connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein and a connection between 9-1-1-0-1 and Operation Iraqi Freedom. Governments lied. The government lied about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq being a threat to the United States peace. And guess what else? If they don't find them some weapons of mass destruction, they're going to do just like the LAPD and plant them some weapons of mass destruction. Governments lie. But I'm sitting to help you. I'm sitting to take care of your neighbor. He's sitting to help us. Where governments lie, God does not lie. Write it down. Numbers 23:19. It says God is not man that he should lie. Now that's the King James translation. The New Revised Translation says, repeat it after me so you won't forget it. God is not a human being that he should lie. Say it again. God is not a human being that he should lie. Let's say it together. God is not a human being that he should lie. Where governments lie, God does not lie. That's number one. Number two, governments change. Long before there was a red, white, and blue colonization, the Egyptian government was doing colonization. They colonized half the continent of Africa and colonized parts of the Mediterranean. All colonizers ain't white. Turn to your neighbor and say, oppressors come in all colors. Hello, hello, hello. But where the government of Egypt and Pharaoh ran it, they don't run a thing today. Why? Because governments change. When the Babylonians carried away the people of promise into exile, the Babylonian government was the baddest government around. But when King Nebuchadnezzar went crazy, his government was replaced by the government of King Belshazzar. King Belshazzar held a great big feast, big banquet, defiled the sacred vessels stolen from the temple in Jerusalem, and a hand appeared out of nowhere and started writing on the wall, Mene, Mene, Tekel, Parson. And Daniel translated the writing for the king and told him, here's what it means, king. You can find this in Daniel 5. Write it down. Mene, God has numbered the days of your government and brought it to an end. Governments change. Tekel, you have been weighed on the scales of justice and you're too light to balance the scales. Parson, that's from the verb peres. Your kingdom, your government is divided and given now to the Medes and to the Persians. And the Bible says that night, that same night, King Belshazzar was killed and Darius the Mede took over the government. Yeah, governments change, y'all. Darius was replaced later on by another government. And then another 70 years later, King Cyrus said to the people of promise, y'all can go back home. All I'm trying to get you to see is that governments change. Prior to Abraham Lincoln, the government in this country said it was legal to hold Africans in slavery in perpetuity. Perpetuity is one of the University of Chicago words. That means forever. From now on. When Lincoln got in office, the government changed. Prior to the passing of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments to the Constitution, the government slaves as property. Property. People with no rights to be respected by any whites anywhere. The Supreme Court of the government, same court, granddaddy court of the one that stole the 2000 election. Supreme Court said in its Dred Scott decision in the 1850s, no African anywhere in this country has any rights that any white person has to respect at any place, anytime. That was the government's official position, backed up by the Supreme Court, that's the judiciary, backed up by the executive branch, that's the president, backed up by the legislative branch, and enforced by the military of the government. But I stopped by to tell you tonight that governments change. Prior to Harry Truman's government, the military in this country was segregated. But governments change. Prior to the civil rights and equal accommodations laws of the government in this country, there was back segregation by the country, legal discrimination by the government, prohibited blacks from voting by the government. You had to eat in separate places by the government. You had to sit in different places from white folk because the government said so. And you had to be buried in a separate cemetery. It was apartheid American style from the cradle to the grave, all because the government backed it up. But guess what? Governments changed under Bill Clinton. We got a messed up welfare to work bill, but under Clinton, blacks had an intelligent friend in the Oval Office. Oh, but governments changed. The election was stolen. We went from an intelligent friend to a dumb Dixiecrat, a rich Republican who has never held a job in his life, is against affirmative action, against education, I guess he is, against health care, against benefits for his own military, and gives tax breaks to the wealthiest contributors to his campaign. Governments change sometimes for the good and sometimes for the bad. But I'm fitting to help you again. Turn back and say, he's fitting to help us again. Where governments change, write this down, Malachi 3:6. Malachi 3:6, thus saith the Lord. Repeat it after me, for I am the Lord, and I change not. That's the King James Version. The New Revised says, for I, the Lord, do not change. In other words, where governments change, God does not change. God is the same yesterday, today, and forevermore. That's what his name, I am, means. You know, he does not change. There is no shadow of turning in God. One songwriter puts it this way: as thou hast been, thou forever will be. Thou changest not. Thy compassions, they fail not. Great is thy faithfulness, Lord. Against slavery on yesterday, and God, who does not change, is still against slavery today. God was a God of love yesterday, and God, who does not change, is still a God of love today. God was a God of justice on yesterday, and God, who does not change, is still a God of justice today. Turn to your neighbor and say, God does not change. Where governments lie, God does not lie. Where governments change, God does not change. And I'm through now. But let me leave you with one more thing. Governments fail. The government in this text, comprised of Caesar, Quirinius, Pontius Pilate, Pontius Pilate, the Roman government failed. The British government used to rule from east to west. The British government had a Union Jack. She colonized Kenya, Ghana, Nigeria, Jamaica, Barbados, Trinidad, and Hong Kong. Her navies ruled the seven seas all the way down to the tip of Argentina in the Falklands. But the British government failed. The Russian government failed. The Japanese government failed. The German government failed. And the United States of America government, when it came to treating her citizens of Indian descent fairly, she failed. She put them on reservations. When it came to treating her citizens of Japanese descent fairly, she failed. She put them in internment prison camps. When it came to treating the citizens of African descent descent fairly, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America. That's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human. God damn America. As long as she tries to act like she is God and she is supreme. The United States government has failed the vast majority of her citizens of African descent. Think about this. Think about this. For every one Oprah, a billionaire, you got 5 million blacks who are out of work. For every one Colin Powell, a millionaire, you got 10 million blacks who cannot read. For every one Condoleezza Rice, you got 1 million in prison. For every one Tiger Woods who needs to get beat at the Masters with his fat blazing hips playing on a course that discriminates against women. God has his way of bringing you up short when you get too big for your fat blazing britches. For every one Tiger Woods, we got 10,000 black kids who will never see a golf course. United States government has failed the vast majority of our citizens of African descent. But I'm finna help you one last time. Tell me your name and say he's finna help us one last time. Turn back and say forgive him for the goddamn. That's in the Bible, Lord. Blessings and curses is in the Bible. It's in the Bible. But I'm finna help you one last time. Let me tell you something. Where governments fail, God never fails. When God says it, it's done. God never fails. When God wills it, you better get out the way. Because God never fails. When God fixes it, oh, believe me, it's fixed. God never fails. Somebody right now, you think you can make it. But I want you to know that you are more than a conqueror through Christ. You can do all things through Christ who strengthens you. When the Savior that was sent by God was put to death on a Friday afternoon, it looked like God failed. But early on Sunday morning, the angels in heaven were singing, God never fails. You can't put down what God raises up. God never fails. You can't keep down what God wants up. God never fails. If God up out of a grave, what's going on in your life that in any way can match what God has already done? He abides with you. He'll reside in you. And he'll preside over your problems if you take them to him and leave them with him. Don't take them back. Turn your name and say, stop taking your problems back. See, we always bring our problems to the altar and then we take them right on back to our seat. Turn back and say, stop taking them back. God never fails. Turn and tell him, God never fails. God never fails. Doors of the church are open tonight. God
never fails. White society wants you to know that anti-African racial hatred is a thing of the past.
And the Democrats are throwing the election away. For what? An inadequate black male who would not have been running had it not been a white woman that was running for president. I'm no second-class citizen. And goddamn the Democrats.
With white people showing love like this, who needs enemies? Intelligent Aboriginal Radio. The Anti-Colonial Cure for Mental Slavery.